CenturyLink.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
It is 8:06. It's time for Hunter Chamber Radio weather. 40 degrees right now, clear skies, no chance of precipitation in the area. Today is Friday, TGIF. It is April 15, 2016. The weather forecast from Weather Underground says it's going to be sunny today with patchy frost this morning. Highs in the mid-60s. Northeast winds around 5 miles an hour. Clear and patchy frost after midnight tonight. Lows in the upper 30s. East winds around 5 miles an hour, becoming north after midnight. Sunny and highs in the mid-60s, northwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. For tomorrow, sunny and highs in the upper 60s on Sunday, sunny highs in the mid-70s on Monday, and partly sunny highs in the mid-60s on Tuesday, and finally, Wednesday the 20th, sunny highs in the mid-60s. Good morning, Hunter. That's Hunter Chamber Radio weather.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Here coming live from the Hunter Chamber of Commerce offices. We're in Flemington, New Jersey, and we're down the street from the old courthouse, the Union Hotel, the famous Lindbergh trial. It's my job to get you out and about on your day, going to work, going to school, running errands. You need to be on the earth, though, because over the wire, we're not over the air. We're the only 24-hour talking air radio station in the nation, produced by Chamber of Commerce, and we're all about Hunterdon County, New Jersey. Well, it's Friday, and we got through all the frost, we got through all the chilly weather. Now it's time to enjoy, isn't it? Looking forward to it. It's Friday, it's 8:10. We are here in the studio, and I got some fun happening today, because we're going to learn a little bit more about the world of Hunterdon County.
Well, good afternoon. It is Friday. It's a few minutes after 4, not 8 o'clock in the morning. Sorry. If anybody who travels up and down Route 31 knows, traffic is horrendous, and today we have a beautiful day. So I think that a lot of people have decided to leave work early. I'm Pat Smith. So I'll be back as soon as I tell you who our sponsors are today, and I'll let you know about the weather for the weekend.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Hi, we're back. It's Friday, actually Friday, April 15th. Most people feel like they have to get their taxes in today, but we have a couple extra days. So what's happening today? Well, let's talk about the weather. If you have not been outside today, it is gorgeous. Although it only seems, it doesn't seem as warm as, it actually seems warmer than the temperature, but we have a beautiful day today. Tonight, however, don't get those plants outside yet, because although it's going to be clear, it's going to be patchy frost. And, of course, your luck, my luck, is as soon as I put plants out, the patchy frost decides to pounce right where I have my plants. So don't put them out. Tomorrow should be another beautiful day, although there's talking about patchy frost in the morning, and then really very nice. A high of about 65 degrees, but sunny. Tomorrow night, clear, low of about 36 degrees. And then again on Sunday, we should have sunny weather and a high of about 69 or 70. So it's going to be a beautiful weekend, beautiful day to get out, beautiful day to get out on Sunday and do something, or, I guess those of us that need to do it need to clean up our yards. And again, Monday should be nice. Although it might be partly cloudy or some clouds on Monday, it could be 74, 75 degrees. So that's the weather, and I'll be right back, and we'll talk about the law.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com. Mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Well, hi, I'm Pat Smith. Just now dropped something. But I'm back, and I don't think it broke anything. So the program, it's Friday the 15th. The program is It's the Law. And I just wanted to give you a bit of an update as to the program last week, if you were listening. My guest last week was Miles Winder. He's the president of the New Jersey Bar. And as president of the New Jersey Bar, Miles and the trustees and everyone else and any lawyer who knew about it was working very hard to make sure that the 23 judges who are up for tenure would in fact be renominated and have a hearing. It doesn't mean that they all have to be reappointed, but they all deserve a hearing. And I have good news because my understanding is that there has been a deal worked out with Governor Christie, and he was the one who was holding this up and frankly holding the judges hostage. And that's my view, and although it may not be the view of the station, as you know, we have free speech around here. But honestly, what was happening was a tragedy, and I think it'll make other attorneys, good attorneys in the future, think twice about whether or not they want to become a judge. But the good news is that it seems like the stalemate is over. Governor Christie has agreed to at least renominate the first four judges who are on that list, and that includes two family judges, a judge in Essex County, Judge Kessler, who has done an excellent job in that position in a very tough court, and Judge Rahill here in Warren County. When I say here in Warren County, is that because we have a vicinage, Somerset, Warren, and Hunterdon, often the judges may sit, judges who are appointed from Warren County could be sitting here in Hunterdon County, or there have been times where cases from Hunterdon have been sent to Warren. So that's good news because it takes so long to get a new judge reappointed. And once a judge is not reappointed, they're over. They're done. They lose their pension. They lose their medical. And they're faced with finding a job after 7 years of, most cases, dedicated service to the state of New Jersey. So judges should not be part of the political game playing that goes on. And I will say that to everyone. Many people who know me know that I've been very active in the American Bar Association. And I can tell you that we don't want a state where judges are elected. We really have a merit system here, and that needs to continue. And the political game playing that's been going on during this administration is really not in the public's best interest. But then, you know, I don't understand it, actually. I don't care if they play politics with other positions, but they shouldn't do it with the judges. And I think the next thing is we have to deal with some of the holdover prosecutors. But the difference, and I've explained this before, is if a prosecutor has not been reappointed, he or she stays in the office until either a new prosecutor is appointed or they're reappointed. So what's happening this week? Well, I really did want to talk about something before I talk about some of the cases. And that is there was a celebration last night honoring Susan J. Hoffman. And if you're not familiar with Susan, you've probably, if you vote, you've probably voted for her because she is the surrogate here in Hunterdon County. And not only is she a long-serving surrogate, she is really top-notch. I don't think people ever recognize how easy it is to probate a will and how helpful she is with dealing with the wills and estates and all of the things the surrogate's office deals with, including adoptions. But last night, the Volunteer Guardianship One-on-One organization honored Susan Hoffman. And Susan was one of the co-founders of the organization. And you might ask, well, you know, what is that organization? And what we have here in Hunterdon County is just a unique volunteer organization. And, you know, that was 20 years ago. Susan, based on her vision and with energy and devotion, put together a group of volunteer guardians. And there's now a professional staff who makes certain that nothing falls through the cracks. There's a volunteer board of trustees that give their time and expertise to make sure that all the needs of both the guardians and the wards are met. And it's a great organization that helps those people who need guardians. And as I said, since it's voluntary, the volunteers do great works with the elderly who need guardians, and also sometimes, not sometimes, but the incapacitated residents who have no one else to act on their behalf. So it's a small organization, but it really accomplishes big things. And due to the support, both of the board, of course, the donors, and the members of the community, this group has been very successful in its mission to provide guardians for Hunterdon County's incapacitated residents. And that is really, I can't tell you how many people that they have helped. We have an executive director, so that she, in this case, she usually, in my understanding, attends the initial visit with the elderly incapacitated person. Typically, this is done in their home. And what the genesis of this comes from many, many sources. It may be a neighbor who is worried about an elderly neighbor who lives alone and has not been seen outside, or they're worried that there aren't any groceries, or, you know, that they're not able to handle things, that they may be confused. They, you know, can't live alone, or maybe can live alone with some assistance. So there is a director of volunteers, and what happens is volunteers who volunteer to be guardians are trained, and they're selected, and there's trying to match of the guardian with the ward, so that they can, you know, really, you know, work at a level that really helps the person who otherwise could not be living alone, either to live alone or perhaps to go into some other facility, but to have someone who can really help them out. And, you know, I have to tell you, I'm really proud of living in Hunterdon County, and with all of the facilities we have, both private and public, and there are just many people out there that enable older people and incapacitated people to, you know, continue living here. Now, the person who was also very, very involved in this group, and, you know, it's sad that, you know, so many of us knew here I was about to say Monsignor, excuse me, Rabbi Jaffe. He was just instrumental. And those of you who knew him, I certainly knew of him, didn't know him well. But those of you who knew him knew that Rabbi Evan Jaffe passed away in 2015. And one of the things that I always like to repeat or hear is what he had to say, and that is, the essentials of volunteer guardianship are the profound act of taking into one's hands another person's life, the ability to make a difference in that person's life, the learning of new skills, the meeting of new people to serve with a team of caring, devoted, supportive individuals. And that's a quote from Rabbi Evan Jaffe, who we lost much too soon and who was so instrumental in working with this organization. So if, in fact, you know of anyone who needs these services, I would absolutely tell you to contact this organization. If, in fact, you have one more place or room to spend some extra time as a volunteer in Hunterdon County, this is certainly a wonderful organization. And so that many people join the volunteer guardianship one-on-one. They do get trained. They are able to really help individuals who, at this stage in their life, for whatever reason, they're not able to help themselves. And so that, one of us, all of us know, as we're getting older, that we're going to see a wave of older adults in need of guardianship in the future. And there are so many people out there who could help. And just frankly, most of these volunteers, I think, would say that they are get more out of it than they give. But the one-on-one, somebody needs all of us, and somebody needs you. So one of the things we talk about is imagine being elderly and alone in the world. No family or friends left. Perhaps you're disabled, unable to make decisions for yourself, and no one left in this world to look out for your best interests. I think we all would agree that that's pretty scary. Now, what happens with volunteer guardianship one-on-one, the organization provides help to such people. And the mission of this organization, which is nonprofit, of course, is to recruit, educate, support, and monitor individuals who wish to give back by serving as guardians for adults who are no longer able to manage their own affairs and who have no family or friends to serve in that capacity. And the organization is always looking for volunteers. Again, if, lots of people can do it. Are you recently retired, unemployed, looking for rewarding volunteer work? If you're willing or would enjoy developing a relationship and helping a person who has no family or friends, or perhaps you've cared for a loved one in the past and found it to be a rewarding experience. For any of these reasons or any other good reason, consider contacting Guardianship One-on-One. And the person to contact is Linda Patrick, and her number is 908-788-4893 at extension 716. They obviously can be contacted on the internet, who can't, and contact them at www.volunteerguardianship.org, and or call me, Pat Smits, and I'll give you the information, 908-236-7530, and just when you call, either leave a message or tell my secretary you want some information about volunteer guardianship one-on-one. And I hope in the future to have people like Susan Hoffman on the program. And as I said, this is, there are many, many worthwhile organizations, and I understand that. But the best thing we can give, and a lot of us give money, but the best thing we can give, if at all possible, is time. So I'll be back with other things about the law, but I wanted to bring that to your attention today because I think it's such a worthwhile organization, such an important organization, and it shows what people who didn't have to do this started out and did it, started it 20 years ago, and it has grown and been very successful. And last night was the second annual Star Celebration honoring Susan J. Hoffman, and she is also the surrogate. If you're ever in the courthouse, if you ever need help, believe me, you never have to worry about asking Susan stupid questions. She guides people through when, I've heard so many stories about how helpful she was when someone in the family unexpectedly died, when they couldn't find a will, when they didn't know what to do. And she also handles other things, of course, the commitments. And so this is a wonderful person, honestly, who's done so much for this community for so many years, and she deserves that honor. And, if you know Susan or have any interest in volunteering, please call that organization because it will change your life for the better. Be back in a minute.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Well, hi, we're back again. The program, It's the Law. I guess I thought I'd start today with something that I consider very silly in 2016. And that is, an art gallery was cited for displaying a painting depicting a woman's bare buttocks. And, you know, come on, in 2016, displaying in an art gallery a picture of a woman with her bare buttocks. In any event, they filed a First Amendment suit against the city of Englewood. And all I can say is if Englewood pursues this, you know, there goes more taxpayer money, which seems to me to be, you know, rather stupid. I don't know much more about the case. However, you know, if you don't like to see the buttocks, you don't go in the art gallery. As we know, our kids can turn on television and see much worse than that. But that was my stupid of the day. Now there have been a couple cases that have been published. The appellate division case, there is a case that came down about residential and commercial real estate. And in this case, plaintiff sued his neighbors, alleging that the wall between their properties had been damaged by roots of trees growing in the defendant's yard. Now, this case, they said, of course, that the Supreme Court has stated that nuisance claims are governed by the Restatement Second of Torts. And under that restatement, a possessor of land is not liable for physical harm caused outside of the land by a natural condition. So here, of course, the court found that the trees were in natural condition because they had not been planted or preserved by defendants. Defendants cutting trees or cutting the trees back did not create a liability because there was no evidence that that they had an affirmative duty to take action to preserve the trees or that it improved the health or growth of the trees or their roots. So as an intermediate appellate court, the appellate division declined plaintiff's invitation to adopt the restatement third of torts. Now, this is obviously, some legalese, but in fact, the fact that the wall between the parties' properties had been damaged by roots of trees growing in the defendant's yard did not make them liable for any damage to the wall. So that was a case that was just approved for publication yesterday. Now, then there was another, we have a Torts Claim Act, which I'm not going to get into now, but in any event, this was a suit against Gomes versus Monmouth County, and the court held that it did not require the plaintiff who was treated by a medical provider under contract to provide care to inmates at a county jail, and so it didn't require that to serve that private contractor with a tort claim notice before she can sue the company for negligence. So in this case, they reversed the trial court's dismissal of the claims against the contractor for failure to serve it with notice. So again, this is some legal stuff that has to do with procedural issues. Don't know even know why I bothered to do that. There are, obviously a number of cases that are not reported, and so that they're not precedent. So you can't cite those cases and say, here, I have a case that says the same thing that I'm claiming, and therefore I'm entitled to use that case in support of my case. If they're not published, they cannot be used as precedent. So there was also a case, an educational law case, Zelnick versus Morristown Beard School. And in that case, the parents of a now adult former student at Morristown Beard, and Morristown Beard is a private school, the parents brought suit seeking to recover damages arising out of allegations of sexual misconduct between one of the teachers at the school and their daughter. And in that case, the court dismissed the case, the trial court dismissed the case, because they dismissed based on summary judgment, meaning that the school attorneys went into court and said there's no basis for this case, therefore it has to be dismissed. The judge agreed, and he or she did so. I'm not sure which judge that is. He or she did so based on several reasons. The first was that the student, having reached the age of majority, was the only individual withstanding to recover damages arising out of the school's alleged misconduct. So basically, they said because she was an adult, her parents did not have the right to sue on her behalf. That's what we call standing. In other words, you have to have a basis to file the suit. You have to have something, your rights involved in order to file the suit. Now, they would have, meaning the parents would have been able to file suit on the child's behalf if she was still a minor. The second reason given by the court is that even if the parents had standing, the school owed a duty to the students, not the parents, to prevent or address staff misconduct. I found that very interesting because I would have assumed without thinking about it that a school, when parents pay tuition for a child to go to a private school, that the school would also owe a duty to the parents. But in this case, the court said no. The school does not have any duty to the parents to prevent or address staff misconduct. And then the third reason is, even if the parents had standing and were owed a duty, expert testimony was required to establish the standard of care that should have been exercised by the school in response to the allegations of staff sexual misconduct. So in other words, the allegations here are not against the teacher. They are, but that's not the lawsuit. The lawsuit isn't a suit filing a lawsuit against the teacher. It's a lawsuit against the school where he worked. So in other words, the question is, should the school be liable for the sexual misconduct between a teacher and a student? And in this case, the trial court said, nope, and the school wins before it goes any further. So that was published, so that will be, of course, interesting in the future. I'm sure lots of school attorneys will look at that, and lots of attorneys who handle sexual abuse cases. So let's see what else we have here. There was another case that was approved for publication this past week, Ferguson versus Jonah, and that was a case in Hudson County. And the defendant, Jonah, is a nonprofit corporation. I guess I should spell that. J-O-N-A-H, and it's dedicated to educating the Jewish community about the social, cultural, and emotional factors that lead to same-sex attractions. Jonah uses counseling and other methods to assist individuals to purge unwanted same-sex attractions. This is from the report on the case. So in this case, the plaintiffs allege that Jonah's business practice and their practices violate the New Jersey Consumer Fraud Act. And the plaintiff's claim is based on two separate forms of ascertainable loss. The first is money spent on Jonah's services, and the second is the money spent on the therapy necessitated by Jonah's services. And that's the defendant Jonah moved for partial summary judgment, asserting that the second category of loss is not recoverable under the Consumer Fraud Act. And so however, the court held that reparative therapy can form the basis of an ascertainable loss under the Consumer Fraud Act. So what this is one of these organizations that claim that if they do certain things, they can purge someone, frankly, someone who is attracted to someone of their own sex. It's an extension of all kinds of things that have gone on. But in this case, they say that they're dealing with only individuals who want to purge these unwanted same-sex attractions. I'm not going to go into, you know, the medical reasons, the emotional reasons, but this, I think from my standpoint, legally, this was the correct decision. Now, this simply means that the case can go forward. It doesn't necessarily mean that the plaintiffs win, but at least it can go forward. And people who have paid for this so-called therapy, could in fact win. There's another tax case that was approved for publication: East Newark Town Center versus East Newark Borough. And the court in that case found inadequate proof in the record to support the plaintiff's expert's conclusion that the property achieves maximum productivity from industrial use. And the court found particularly where credible evidence that industrial use is physically possible and financially feasible is lacking. So in other words, they were not able to sustain or provide any credible evidence that an industrial use is even possible or financially feasible. So because proofs failed to support industrial use as the property's highest and best use, comparable leases relied on to derive economic rent do not provide competent evidence of value. And then the court further finds the highest and best use for all years under appeal is holding the property for redevelopment in accordance with the zoning. And then with the remaining industrial tenancies serving as interim use of the property. So apparently there were industrial tenants on the property. And so therefore the assessments in this case were affirmed. So the plaintiffs were trying to say that it should be zoned for industrial use, and apparently taxes for holding property for redevelopment are worth more or higher. The taxes are higher. So what else are we hearing? Unfortunately, the New Jersey Supreme Court has overturned a convicted murderer's 60-year prison sentence because a judge's remarks. And the judge remarked that he always sentences defendants to that amount of time behind bars if they are convicted of first-degree murder. So basically, the Supreme Court said, of course, that's not what you're supposed to do, and since you said that's what you're doing, they overturned the conviction. They overturned the sentence, not the conviction, the sentence, and sent it back, obviously, and assumed to another judge to sentence the person. Judges have to be extremely careful with what they say. They really do. There was a criminal case, and a trial judge's that was different. During a subsequent unrelated status conference. No, this is the same case, actually. It's State versus McFarland, and this was Justice Solomon in the Supreme Court, and that was his. He wrote the decision where, because the trial judge made the statement during a subsequent and unrelated status conference that he always gives 60-year sentences to defendants convicted of first-degree murder. If a jury convicts him of first-degree murder, and what our Supreme Court said, that statement undermines public confidence in our system of criminal sentencing, because, of course, there are real guidelines as far as sentencing. And so what they did is they remanded the case, which means they sent it back. They didn't resentence, but they sent it back so it would be another judge, a different judge would do the sentencing. So let's see what else. There have been a number of criminal cases. But there was one, I believe, an interesting case, a family law case, that was published, proof for publication and published. And the judge who wrote the opinion in this case was Judge Koblish. She's on the appellate division. She served for many years as the presiding judge in family in Bergen County, and she served in other capacities on the bench. But in this appeal, in this case, the appellate division examined the effect of a non-relocation agreement on a subsequent request by the primary custodial parent to relocate to a different state. In New Jersey, we have a statute that does not allow a parent who, if the parties are divorced, the statute doesn't allow the custodial parent to move out of state without either the other parent's consent or a court indicating that they can, and there's almost always a necessity of a plenary hearing. In this case, the trial judge did not have a plenary hearing, and then if in fact there's a plenary hearing, there's an analysis that must be done on another case called Bowers. But in this case, the appellate division said, no, you have to go back to the trial court, and then, however, the non-custodial parent, if they're unable to negotiate, well, if they're unable to demonstrate that the custodial parent negotiated the property settlement agreement in bad faith, and the custodial parent is able to prove a substantial, unanticipated change in circumstances, then at that point, the custodial parent should be accorded the benefit of the analysis under the Bowers case. But in this case, what happened is the parties negotiated that they would not move out of a certain area, move out the children out of New Jersey, and later the wife decided she wanted to move to Utah because she met someone and she was going to be remarried. But anyone concerned about if they're getting divorced, concerned that their spouse who has primary custody of their children might move out of state, should really look at this case. This is one of the string of cases with respect to whether or not a custodial parent is entitled to relocate out of state after divorce. And, you know, there's a lot of controversy about this because there's some people who would say, well, it unfairly deprives the other parent of seeing the children. And frankly, in most cases, there's no way that the children can maintain the same relationship. And the pendulum has swung back and forth on this one as to whether the custodial parent should be able to move or not. And, of course, the custodial parent can always move. The question is whether or not the parent is able to move with the children. And at a certain age, the children have their own input. But this is talking about children who don't. And I know there are times where it's very cavalierly said, oh, well, through Skype and emails and text messages and, you know, everybody can do face-to-face on telephone these days. It doesn't make a difference. But you ask any parent whose children have been moved to another state, and I think they'll tell you differently. It's a very tough question. It's a question that we handle in my area of law all the time, but it's still tough. Because there's going to be a winner and a loser. In most other situations, there's always some compromise that gives each parent a little of what they want, but not in this area, because either someone's going to move or they're not going to move. Well, we'll be back with in a couple minutes. I want to tell you who else is sponsoring this program. And as I said, if you ever have any questions about these things I talk about, if in fact you don't hear the name of the case, you can always give me a call and I'll give you the name of the case and how you can find it, or even which court heard it. Sometimes I have information about who the attorneys are, or I can find that. So we'll be back shortly.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, Celebrant Officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. and I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by... The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon...
I guess that was a bit premature. We'll play that spot right before the news or right after the news. So we're still talking about the law, what's been happening in the last week or two. One of the questions that a federal judge had to deal with in the last week, and he refused, at least for now, to compel arbitration of a wage and hour class action suit against Santander Bank. And he did so because he found that the language in the company's arbitration agreement with the mortgage is ambiguous. So I guess things like that happen sometimes, and at least they can proceed at trial rather than having to go to arbitration. And if you look at most contracts, in most contracts we all just sign the contract because it's 3 or 4 or 5 or more pages long. We don't read it. And usually it does, in fact, talk about arbitration rather than litigation. There's a case about corporate bylaws. I'm not sure that that's all that interesting, or maybe it's just not interesting to me. Now, there was a case that... what I was really surprised about, I don't think I have the entire case, but this was a religious school, a Quaker-run school. In that case, a lawsuit by the mother of a special needs student who was expelled from a Quaker-run school has been what they call trimmed by a federal judge, and his ruling... or her ruling, that the defendant is entitled to a religious school exemption from the Americans with an exemption from the Americans with Disabilities Act and the New Jersey law against discrimination. So this was that was an interesting outcome, that in fact the judge said that because it was a religious school, a Quaker-run school, that they're entitled to that exemption. There's nobody in another school, a public school, for example, that would be so entitled. Now, also, in State versus Odom, this was a 1989 case. The New Jersey Supreme Court held that a law enforcement expert witness could testify that a defendant possessed a controlled dangerous substance and could testify that not only did the defendant possess a controlled dangerous substance, could testify that the defendant had the intent to distribute it. Now, they were allowed to do this even though intent was what we would call an ultimate issue of fact that either the jury or the judge must decide. So that was a little, most of us, or many of us, at least I, would think that decision was a bit unusual under the circumstances, but that's why you never really know what happens in the court, and frankly, we don't have all of the information that we would need to really make an analysis of why the judge might have done what the judge did. There was this case, Walker versus Costco Wholesale Warehouse, and maybe people are interested in that only because it's Costco, but in this was a slip and fall case. And the appellate division held that the trial court was in error when the trial court rejected plaintiff's request to change the jury. So the trial court, the appellate division, excuse me, I'm trying to break this down. The appellate division said that the trial court was wrong. And what the trial court did was say to the plaintiff, no, I'm not going to charge the jury with mode of operation liability principles under the Model Civil Jury Charge Act. Sure, it's very confusing, and it really is. But in this case, what happened is the plaintiff, Walker, presented a reasonable factual basis for a jury to find that he perceived to be a white yogurt-based substance on the floor of defendant's warehouse store came from a self-service display stand offering cups of free cheesecake. And on retrial, the court should, the appellate division held that on retrial, the court should specifically include in its charge to the jury an instruction that the defendant is not liable under the mode of operation principles unless the jury finds that the food offered at the self-service display was the source of the substance on which plaintiff slipped. In other words, he's got to prove that was ever on that display was the same thing that was on the slip. I'm sorry, same thing that was on the floor when plaintiff slipped. Guess I'm getting ahead of myself there. So we probably have time for about one more. And we're going back to kind of the beginning of April. So the... Now, there is one thing, is be careful what you do. And in a case said that whether he did it out of kindness or not, advancing money to cash-strapped clients remains a no-no in New Jersey. And it earned one New Jersey lawyer a censure when he acknowledged it after already having been disciplined for it. So, you know, this guy was disciplined for lending money to clients and then, continued to do it. And there was no evidence in this case, as I recall, that this was for some kind of outrageous interest. So there was another case that I think is, is kind of the warning case and something that we should all certainly tell our kids. And that is, in this case, the defendant was convicted of leaving the scene of a motor vehicle accident involving serious bodily injury and leaving the scene of a motor vehicle accident resulting in injury. Well, obviously, you would say, well, if there was serious bodily injury, there had to be injury. And so in this case, the trial court ordered that the motor vehicle violation merged into the criminal offense and that the penalties survive merger. Now, the judge sentenced the defendant to a 4-year term of probation for the criminal offense and a custodial sentence, meaning a jail sentence, of 180 days on the what we call the Title 39 violation. And in that case, he was charged with two things. So I think I should explain that. When you're convicted of leaving the scene of a motor vehicle accident involving serious bodily injury, that falls under New Jersey statute 2C:12-1.1. Now, the motor vehicle leaving the scene ordinarily of a motor vehicle accident resulting in injury is what we call a Title 39 violation. And so that in this case, the judge thought that the Title 39 violation required a jail sentence He thought it was mandatory. And so that the appellate division said that they agreed that the criminal offense and the motor vehicle violation, the Title 39, merged as a matter of law, and that the Title 39 penalties survived merger. But they reversed on the imposition of a jail sentence, concluding it was not mandatory under Title 39. And then they remanded the case for resentencing. So the major thing that everybody should know, however, is, you know, no matter what, you do not leave the scene of an accident. You just don't.